In November, many families start planning big holiday get-togethers with lots of extra food. But for some families, the start of winter can mean food shortage and hardship for people struggling with high inflation and low incomes. Add the problems caused by supply constraints, coastal storms that destroyed local freezers, and the crash in some salmon fisheries, and heading into the coldest part of the season could be bleak for too many Alaskans. What help is available for those who are food insecure, and how can you pitch in? We'll discuss it today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. November and December are often seen as months of giving through financial donations and food drives, dropping off extra supplies at community food banks or shelters. This is the season when sharing with others is on our minds. We've seen numerous examples in recent months of why it could be more difficult for some Alaskans this winter than it was last year, and why some families will need extra assistance. A lack of salmon for Yukon and Kuskokwim families after subsistence fishing was closed. The Bering Sea coastal storm earlier this fall that sent seawater and debris into communities and homes, killing power to freezers that were full of winter food, now gone. And of course, the perennially high cost of food in Alaska, and especially rural communities, who saw inflation send prices even higher in local stores. Who is helping these communities and how does it look heading into winter? Here to help us understand the need and how local advocates are working to meet it is Ron Meehan. Ron is the Policy and Advocacy Manager for the Food Bank of Alaska. And also joining us today is Jen Brown. Jen is the president of the Ketchikan Agricultural Producers Association. Welcome, both of you.
Good morning, Lori. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here, Ron. It's great to have you in the studio. And Jen, you're on by phone from Ketchikan. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You can also join us Alaskans. Do you volunteer at a local food bank or help with drives to gather up supplies for neighbors in need? Or are you in need yourself and want to know what resources are available to you? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email questions or comments to talk@alaskapublic.org. Food insecurity certainly isn't a new problem, but with the spike in prices for food and fuel in recent months and supply restrictions also driving cost increases, many more families may be feeling the stress of trying to keep enough food on the table while also paying other bills. The Alaska Food Policy Council reported in 2021 that one in seven Alaskans are food insecure, including one in five children. This was before inflation shot up. So, Ron, what is the food bank seeing for demand currently, and how would you say that it's maybe changed in the last 6 months even?
Right. Food Bank of Alaska has three partner distribution organizations in Fairbanks, Kenai Peninsula, and Juneau, as well as 150 partner agencies all across Alaska. And really, in the last 2 to 3 years, we've seen an unprecedented level of food insecurity. We've been facing not just the public health emergency from COVID-19, but also really an economic emergency that I think we're seeing play out right now with rapidly rising costs and inflation. And that is putting even greater strain on Alaskan families, many of whom were already struggling.
Mm-hmm. And where did you say the food bank facilities are in the state? Kenai, Fairbanks, Anchorage?
So the three partner distribution organizations are partners that have agencies themselves. And outside of our facility in Anchorage, those are in the Kenai Peninsula, Fairbanks, and Juneau.
And how do you work with other places in the state, in more rural communities where certainly need is great with the cost of food always so high in rural Alaska and especially now?
Absolutely, yeah. So we have, you know, partner agencies in a lot of rural communities and a lot of Alaska Native villages, and we work very closely with them to monitor, you know, what they've been seeing on the ground, what their needs are, and getting foods to them. Now, oftentimes, you know, a big part of the conversation that we've been having more recently is trying to get healthier foods and culturally appropriate foods to those communities, which is oftentimes a lot harder to do than just, you know, saying that you'll do it. You know, we're somewhat limited in the sense that a lot of the foods that are going to those communities are through our federal programs. And I should say that inflation and rising costs have also really had a big impact on our ability to even receive food and get it out to where it's needed. It's been connected to supply chain disruptions. So, you know, we have CSFP, the Commodity Supplemental Food Program, which is our senior boxes. We have TFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, among others. And those are administered by the United States Department of Agriculture. And what we've seen actually is that the rising costs of food have driven farmers away from selling to the government. They've gotten better deals. And so even when we'll have food purchasing orders for, you know, the foods that we have in these federal programs, they're not always met. And sometimes there are enormous delays in getting foods for those programs as a result.
Are you saying that farmers are getting better prices by going where? To other nations or to other distribution outlets?
Other nations and in the private sector, yes. The war actually in Ukraine has had an impact as well. You know, there's a huge demand on grain and other food items across Europe and in Africa as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. So exacerbating an already big problem. Jen, I want to get you in here now. Your nonprofit, the Ketchikan Agricultural Producers Association, I have to say that fields of crops do not come to mind when I think of Southeast. So tell us about what you're envisioning for the future of ag and food security in the Southeast part of the state.
Sure. Well, I mean, to ladder on to what Ron was saying about shortages in supply, I think that was something that became pretty starkly clear to us in the Southern Southeast community during COVID, where we saw a lot of the shipping got disrupted. And when we saw the grocery shelves starting to become emptier and emptier, we realized that the level of insecurity in our communities is actually a lot higher than it appeared to be prior. And out of that, there was a desire to kind of close, help mitigate some of the risk that being dependent on the national and global agricultural supply chain presents to our community. And from that, we founded the Ketchikan Agricultural Producers Association. There are individuals within the Ketchikan community and surrounding communities who are working to try to create agricultural businesses, agricultural-based businesses. And as you've said, Lori, it's not the easiest thing to do on an island in remote Alaska. So the organization is really there to support agricultural producers of all types and find ways to increase their technical assistance, financial assistance, any kind of capacity building that's needed, as well as connect potential producers to consumers across either the individual household level or the institutional or commercial level.
All right. Thanks for getting us started there. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about food security and families in need as we head into winter. And this is the season when people are thinking about sharing with others. But as we know, as winter moves forward, it gets harder and harder to get those resources to families. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation, if you have questions or comments or ideas for how to help neighbors in need. 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Jen, staying with you for a moment now, what are you... Are you looking at models in other places for this concept that you're developing there, this idea of a food hub in Ketchikan? Are there other places that you could model something after for your area? And do you have ideas about what's realistic? How much can local growers, if they have small plots that they're growing things, how many families do you think that it's possible to support on a more stable year-round basis instead of just, okay, it's August, I got a harvest here, here's some extra lettuce. You know, how do you stabilize it in the long term?
Sure. So to answer the first question, we are, for the feasibility study and needs assessment that we're currently doing to establish a food hub in Ketchikan, we're working with a national research consultancy called the Food Works Group. They work with rural communities all over the United States. So they have a breadth of experience to draw from, and they've helped establish food hubs in communities all over the contiguous lower 48, as well as in Hawaii. And so they have experience with both, you know, communities that are on a road system as well as communities that are not, which we found valuable. And then within the state itself, there are actually several food hubs in Alaska throughout Kodiak and Juneau and other areas north, where there also have been feasibility studies done for those that we can also draw some knowledge from. So there are other examples of locations where we could potentially get the knowledge that we need to make sure that we're addressing the needs of our specific.
All right. Are you still there? Oh, I think we might have lost Jen. The problems with phone lines. We'll have to get her back on. Sorry about that, everyone. I'm sure we'll get her back in just a moment. This is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about food security as we head into winter. And in the studio with me is Ron Meehan. Ron is the Policy and Advocacy Manager for the Food Bank of Alaska. We'll get Jen Brown back on the phone. Jen is the president of the Ketchikan Agricultural Producers Association. So, Ron, because everyone is being hit by higher prices, are you seeing fewer donations as people need to tighten their budgets?
We are, in fact, not just from individual donations, but also sort of a slight decline in grocer donations, as well as they try to hold on to things for as long as they can. There are, you know, food items that would normally go to us that they're keeping on the shelves longer. And it's partially because of the rising costs, but also because of supply chain disruptions that we particularly saw through this summer when they weren't sure when they would be getting another shipment.
And when you say food that they normally would send to you, but they're keeping on the shelves a lot longer, what does that mean?
It just means that they're keeping food that is not completely, it's still usable, right? It's not completely expired.
But it's like
expired,
closer to the expiration date. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I assumed you meant. Thank you. The cost of fuel for people who may have to drive to get to food assistance, are you hearing that that's also a larger issue now, as I imagine it is, if people can't afford to drive to get supplies? What are the options for them? I mean, if you're already having struggles with your budget, and then if you've got to drive 20 miles to get to a food distribution center, or even 10 miles, if you don't have gas, you can't afford to get there to get the food you need, what can people do then?
Right, and that has been a major obstacle, particularly in rural communities and communities where clients have to drive further to get the food assistance that they need. And, you know, we've heard a lot of about that from our partner agencies across the state. Unfortunately, many of them have very limited capacities to deliver food, but there's certainly a big push to try to do that more as much as they are able to. I know in Anchorage, we do operate 8 or 9 mobile food pantries around the city and try to get those, in as many different places and make those as accessible as possible. But that's definitely a big challenge that we're facing right now.
I know of at least one Anchorage resident who I won't name because I don't know if that person wants it out more publicly than it already is on Instagram, but he is on Instagram. And he posts about feeding people, that he makes meals and takes them to parks, or he makes sandwiches and takes them to the community refrigerator and leaves them there. Do you hear of people doing more of those kind of sort of direct outreach efforts like that, where they're just maybe making a big pot of chili and taking it to a park or something?
Absolutely. We are seeing more of that, and I think that's definitely filling a void that currently exists. So that's very encouraging. One silver lining, I think, from the pandemic is that there have been so many people that have experienced hardships and have needed help that never thought that they would. And it's really come alongside an increased appreciation for the work that we do and greater public awareness, which I think encourages more people to give back.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation about food insecurity and what we can all do to help stabilize resources into the future. Everyone saw empty shelves during the pandemic, and that causes anxiety for everyone. Whether you can afford to go to the store or not, seeing supplies not available, it doesn't feel good. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide to join our conversation about the future of food security in Alaska. 550-8422 is the local number in Anchorage. That's 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And Jen Brown is back on the line with us again. Jen, you had mentioned in an earlier interview that you often hear that food security equates to stockpiling food. But you have other plans. Describe the model that could lead to what you're hoping for, a more reliable, year-round, stable supply of food.
Sure. So, yes, one of the ways of addressing food security that's been discussed in our community has been to create stockpiles of dry goods, et cetera, in order to, if the worst were to happen and barges were to stop running, we would be able to have access to certain staples. And while that is definitely a solution, at CAPA, we're trying to play a little bit more of a long game there and create a true economy around agriculture as and how it fits into our community, trying to supplement those national and global agricultural supply chains in a way that if the bottom were to drop out, we wouldn't be completely without certain necessities. Obviously, there's only so much you can do with limited land and limited growing seasons, but there have been a lot of developments in technology in agriculture in terms of closed environment agriculture and things like hydroponics that have created more opportunity, especially in our community. And we've seen a couple of businesses that have popped up, one business and one nonprofit, that are focused on developing hydroponic growing systems within Ketchikan itself. And the hope is that between that and other things like smart green housing and other resources like food hubs, we can start to kind of lower the barrier to entry for creating crops that grow within the community. And the positive there is that not only does it provide stability of food supply, but it also creates economic opportunity within the community as well and creates kind of a closed loop system where we're growing and supplying ourselves for certain crops that can help support food security.
Well, talk a little bit about what's being done with hydroponics. It seems like one of the pieces that has to be in place is a pretty inexpensive power source, correct?
Correct. Fortunately, in Ketchikan, we do have hydroelectric, which is, and our utility rates are very low compared to many other communities in Alaska. So it is an ideal place for a hydroponic setup to be established. We have two entities in Ketchikan. One is called Ketchikan Evergreens. They're a for-profit company owned by a local couple. And they have been supplying, actually, they sell out of their supply of leafy greens that they deliver weekly within minutes of their weekly sale going online. So they actually were able to go from a one containerized unit to two just in the last 12 months because the demand for their material within the community is so vast. And they've started expanding from just growing mixed leafy greens to now they're growing different types of herbs as well, like dill and sage. And, you know, because they're a for-profit business, their ability to grow is obviously, you know, related to capital. But as far as demand goes within the community, it's very much there. And then we have another entity called Outpost Agriculture. They are a nonprofit organization. They're focused on hydroponic leafy greens as well, with an aim to be supporting entities like food banks and other nonprofits to supply the need.
Well, and that's fantastic to have, you know, fresh produce is, of course, a wonderful thing for a lot of communities that otherwise have to wait long for a barge or shipment by air, and maybe it's not in the best shape when it gets to you. So that's fantastic. But what about beyond leafy greens? What do you think the potential is for other types of crops and stabilizing food sources in the future, both through hydroponics and maybe some other growing methods?
Yeah, I think that there is a large opportunity for other types of closed environment agriculture, things like greenhousing and high tunnels. There is a farmer on Gravina Island, which is very close to Ketchikan, where our airport is, who she has a couple of high tunnels and puts forth an incredible output of a huge variety of fruit and vegetables. It's absolutely amazing what she's able to grow. And what I really think it comes down to is a first and foremost, the ability that it's possible, because as you said, you don't come to Ketchikan and think, wow, this is some great farmland. but what you are able to do in a very small space, I think is especially for a community the size of Ketchikan, it does make an impact. It is possible to make an impact. So I think that mindset is almost the first barrier to overcome there of this is possible and it's not as difficult to do as you would think. And then two is just, you know, creating the ability to do it, whether that's the materials to build greenhouses, the materials to build high tunnels, getting things up into our community in a way that's not necessarily cost prohibitive. I think it's kind of step two. And then from there, it's about creating enough of us of steady supply that we know there's a market. We know that there's a desire in the community for locally grown food. It's just a matter of connecting the people who are willing to take the time and energy and effort to grow it and those who are ready to consume it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Just getting back to that idea of local, you know, producing food locally instead of having it shipped from long distances. Such a great idea. Let's go to the phones for a moment. John is in Anchorage. Hi, John. Hello, John.
Hello. Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I wanted to comment about this whole problem of availability of food and housing and so on for people at large. It's especially a major problem for women with children. There's been huge social change over the course of the last 30, 40 years or so, maybe even longer. And the problem is these are systemically driven issues. And one of the things is that we have never, on a national level, talked about this and put together a program that will meet the needs of people through their work, that is their salaries, their incomes, making adequate enough for people to be able to support themselves. And we have to give up the concern about why we're helping people that way, because the issue really is fundamentally that people need to have a adequate support for family, for food, for housing, and so on. And I'm really discouraged by the fact that we have for years dealt with this issue of poverty and trying to bring people food who are just desperate to basically make it on a daily basis. It's not adequate. Adequate solution needs to be a system that's designed to support everyone. So I think that we need to request this of our senators or a congressperson, whoever that happens to end up being, and that we need to address this question on a much higher level than it is currently. So anyway, that's my opinion about the issue here. But don't get me wrong, it's been wonderful to see all the people supporting food for people who are in need and so on. But it's like a Band-Aid approach to a real major problem in terms of the economic system that we live under.
Mm. Yeah, John, such excellent points. Thank you so much for the call. As John was talking about the need for a more holistic, systemic approach, you and I, Ron, were both nodding our heads in agreement that we clearly need something that is less herky-jerky and, you know, reactionary and more on the front end so that people don't need to get to the place where they don't have anything to eat. And then it's an act of desperation to go get something for your kids for a meal. And so in thinking about that, what are you seeing? I know that last year the Alaska Food Strategy Task Force was within House Bill 298 that passed. Are some of the legislative steps that you're seeing move forward addressing these kinds of things, the need to stabilize the system and also to help remove that stigma? As John said, people can be, you know, a lot of families are working two or three jobs, really trying hard and still not able to make it. And then they have to go, you know, ask for some help. And that's not easy. So how do we take all of those things and sort of bring those forward so that people can feel not ashamed if or feel uncomfortable asking for help? They shouldn't have to feel that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, we absolutely understand that this is something that we have to take a more holistic and systemic approach to food insecurity, because it's so deeply interconnected to healthcare costs, to housing security, to job security, and so many other factors that Alaskans are dealing with. We were particularly excited about the passage of House Bill 298 for the Food Strategy Task Force. We're incredibly thankful to Representative Liz Snyder and her staff for introducing that and really crafting it into what it is. But that's a strategy task force that will build off of the governor's food security task force, and it'll go for 2 to 3 years. It'll bring together a really robust group of stakeholders across Alaska's food system to really take a closer look at food production and reducing food insecurity.
All right, Jen, do you want to weigh in there about how you see your efforts in Ketchikan kind of coming together to create this food hub and more stabilization? How do you see that fitting within this larger effort legislatively? And are they working in tandem or at odds? Jen? Oh, I think we lost Jen again. Well, I don't know what's happening with our phones, but sometimes technology does not do what we would like to do it at the time that we would like for it to happen. So a reminder that once again, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about food security and food insecurity for far too many families in our state and how we can all help out. We have Ron Meehan in the studio with me, who is the Policy and Advocacy Manager for Food Bank of Alaska. See, I should have kept my glasses on, Ron. And on the line with us intermittently has been Jen Brown, who is the president of the Ketchikan Agricultural Producers Association. You can join our conversation if you have ideas, if you know of need in your community and want to highlight what that is. Statewide, you can join us at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue with more calls and questions about the future of food security as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska, and we have Jen Brown back on the line with us. Hi, Jen.
Hi again.
Hopefully we've got you on a more stable line now. So, Jen, before we lost you, I was asking about how you see the work that you're doing there in Ketchikan, this concept of a food hub and sort of capitalizing on all the small agricultural projects and undertakings in your area to help sort of stabilize for the future for local families. How do you see that either working in tandem with, or maybe not, with these larger legislative efforts such as the Alaska Food Strategy Task Force, the Governor's Task Force, and other entities in the state? Do you see this coming together in a larger effort, or is there education that needs to happen first?
Well, our hope is that all of the efforts that are going towards food security are looking at both the immediate short-term needs as well as a longer-term solution. And recognizing that what we're looking at here is more of a longer-term solution. It is creating a system, right, a true food system that can complement, support, and sometimes fill gaps for the larger systems that are already in place. And recognizing that these local, fragmentation of agriculture and these local systems are equally as important, especially in a state like Alaska, where our population is so fragmented across such a wide geographic space. Where we do need to focus on the micro farmer, we do need to focus on the micro producers. We do need to create infrastructure to allow for the preservation of what is foraged, subsistence harvested, or grown within our communities. And that by not allowing ourselves to look at the long term, like beyond an election cycle, and we're not actually necessarily going to be solving problems in the long term.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. We're going to go back to the phones for a moment. Ron is in Fairbanks. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Thanks for a very interesting program. I used to live in Ketchikan, and so I can appreciate the dilemma down there. I think that sometimes we never think about our problems in ecological conditions. The conditions around the state are all very different, so you have to figure out where you can sort of share things. And particularly, we have this arbitrary boundary with Canada. And I think there's a lot that can be learned when you go across political boundaries into the same ecological zones in terms of being able to produce things. However, the real reason that I'm calling is to talk a little bit about history and the way that we have spent quite a bit of money researching agriculture from the time of the gold rush. You know, the experimental farms were set up in the territory to take care of those people. And Charles Georgeson was a guy who came, the botanical garden in Fairbanks is named for him because he headed the research farm efforts here. But in 1898, he started research plots in Sitka, Kenai, Rampart, Copper Creek area, Copper River area, Kodiak, Fairbanks, and Madawaska. And by 1907, he had a whole series of farms that were researching how people could become more self-sustaining. And it's interesting that some of his research is now being used, but there is a history there that people need to sort of look at. And it's in the literature. You just need to contact the people who are affiliated now with Cooperative Extension Service. And really, those groups are underfunded now because they're in a different kind of political funding scheme. But there's a tremendous amount of information there. And long-term, I take a look at what the state has done in terms of the Delta Barley Project. We know they can produce barley there. We know that there's going to be global demand. We know that there are immigrants who want to come, and as Alaska faces this declining population, we need to be bringing people who can help feed us and who have the skills and the desire to be here. And we know that that's why the Madawaska colony was started during the Depression. They relocated people from places that there was poverty.
Right.
And they tried to get them to farm, but most of them didn't have farming skills. Some stayed, and we have the Mat Valley. We know that the new Nenana agricultural area is being promoted as a way to develop farming. And we have the infrastructure now with railroads and with other ways to move product to market, and there's going to be global demand for it. I think we ought to be looking at this as a longer-term solution by building more people into the state who have the skills that we need, because we know there's going to be global demand for food, and we just need to do it.
Well, thank you, Ron. I appreciate that that context, that historical context, especially talking about some of the history of what's been done with test farming. And as Ron mentioned, people that came up here during the Dust Bowl era from the Midwest and other states that started farming in the Mat-Su Valley, and there's still some farms out there. One of the things that seems to me the most challenging is a protein source. You know, Jen talked about being able to have hydroponics and raise leafy greens and other things, which is fantastic because there's a lot of health benefits in leafy greens and a very important part of the diet. But protein, where do people get enough protein if fisheries collapse, if, you know, you don't have enough acreage to raise beef or other things? That seems to me to be one of the areas that must be the most challenging. How is that for the food bank?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I can say is, you know, as you've heard here today, too, there's so much potential that Alaska has to grow more food and so much enthusiasm around the state. Something I do at Food Bank of Alaska in my role as policy and advocacy manager is manage the Alaska Food Coalition, which has more than 170 food banks, food pantries, tribal organizations, local governments, and other nonprofits. And every day we hear excitement and interest in trying to pursue community gardens, hydroponics, and some of these other avenues that we've heard here today. In terms of growing and meeting the protein needs, that is obviously something that is more challenging. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Alaska is so dependent on other places for the food that it has made things a lot less stable. I mean, I think we've seen that. Actually, fruits and vegetables are another major one. Schools right now are having a particularly challenging time getting fruits and orange juice for their students. And so ultimately what it leads to is an increase in need and a greater strain on the state's anti-hunger network.
And, you know, we haven't even mentioned the fact that it's not just staffing shortages and pandemic disruption that has created a lot of this circumstance, but it's also some of the climate problems that have created, you know, you mentioned lack of fresh fruit, a lack of orange juice. Crops have suffered in certain parts of the country and the world from drought or wildfire, name the crisis, and that's also exacerbating short supply lines and the need for finding ways of localizing and stabilizing food for Alaska. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Stu is on the line from Anchorage. Hello.
Hey, Lori. Hi, Ron. Yeah, this is Stu. Over here in Muldoon, we did have a $5 million grant about 10 years ago at the Northeast Community Council to build a hydroponic greenhouse in the area of the power plant that just got sold to Chugach Electric. They have 91-degree heat in abundance, water heat, that they're trying to find a way to get rid of. And it made sense to start thinking about a greenhouse, and the people that came to us presented it as a hydroponic greenhouse. We have that wonderful greenhouse in Russian Jack. We're paying like $90,000 a year to heat. I've never seen anything grown there you can eat unless you want to steal the coffee beans off the plant. I love the greenhouse, but the hydroponic greenhouse and the potential to put them around our power plants where there's extra heat. Also in Muldoon, the Northeast Community Council and Scenic Foothills Community Council have been working on something to do with the base realignment and closing commission. We're trying to get a little more land out of the military reservation there and possibly 100 yards along the gas line, and that would produce an opportunity for a trail connecting the Ship Creek Bridge, bike trail on, you know, under the Ship Creek Bridge on the Glen Highway all the way to the Campbell Creek Greenbelt. But there's lots of potential for more community parks, agricultural oriented. I watched an old couple pull out a bunch of potatoes from that Chance New Muldoon Food Garden. And they only had like a 15 by 10 foot plot, and they came out with a wheelbarrow full of potatoes.
Nice.
There's plenty of opportunities to start producing food, but it's just that our people don't seem to be geared for it. Just like most of the people that came up with the Matanuska project were not farmers, and they left. Our friends from the Eastern Europe, I see them, and they're doing wonderful. They're growing sprouts under their house. I go hiking with them, and they come out of the woods with shopping bags full of food. And I say, what is it with you guys? You're always picking stuff. And they say, well, where we are from, our shopping supermarkets are empty. And, guys, none of us has experienced that.
Yeah.
But these people who are coming here to Alaska, a lot of them, they got a big step up on us, especially the Russians. They know this climate. They know the plants. And, boy, do they know the mushrooms. So there's all kinds of things that we have to wake up with. And I remember studying World War II in Alaska right after Pearl Harbor. They tried to ship as many civilians out of here as they could because they didn't think we were going to keep our supply lines open. And, boy, if they cut our supply lines, any condition, we're gonna have riots.
Right. Well, yeah. Yes, I imagine we would. Well, thank you, Stu. I appreciate the enthusiasm about what can be done locally. And I think he brought an interesting point and an important point that people just have to also consider the possibilities that are right locally by them and around them. If you grew up in an urban setting, that's harder to do. I grew up in a rural setting. I am the product of dairy farming families. And so when I see a little chunk of land, I'm always thinking about, hey, you could be growing a crop there. You could be having a small garden there. But that's different for a lot of folks that didn't grow up that way. Part of the problem that's happening in addition to what we've been seeing is last year when we were having a lot of trouble still with the ongoing pandemic and supply line disruptions, there were other programs of support. There was individual assistance for pandemic relief. There were other programs in place. But a lot of those have either already ended or are soon to end at the same time. Pandemic relief, food, SNAP, the SNAP program, food assistance, rent assistance. Do you think there should have been a more staggered approach? And is there anything available currently for folks who are really struggling? What do you know about that, Ron?
Yeah, thank you for that question, and it's so incredibly important. Right now, we're really deeply concerned about essentially what we have is a benefits cliff, I think the benefits are ending at a time that we're already facing inflation and rising costs. With the end of the state public health declaration on September 1st. It also meant the expiration of emergency allotments that a lot of families had come to rely on, and a reinstitution of SNAP recertification. Mm. We actually have one of the we have a SNAP recertification that's required every 6 months. And it also meant the end of telephonic waivers for SNAP. So at Food Bank of Alaska, we have a SNAP outreach team. And essentially, there are families that they need to be recertified for SNAP, but the Division of Public Assistance is already backlogged and overwhelmed. And so there are people that are getting kicked off of their benefits. And that doesn't include people that are trying to get SNAP for the first time and not trying to get recertified that are also experiencing a lot of challenges.
Oh, my gosh. And so what kind of a backlog? Are you aware of what that, how many people are waiting?
It's a very significant number. I don't have the exact number, but I know I can speak for our SNAP outreach team in saying that they are very much overwhelmed, and we understand that you know, they help people to the best of their ability, but they ultimately can't recertify people. That has to be the Division of Public Assistance, and they're also overwhelmed and understaffed.
Oh, gosh. So just the common refrain, unfortunately, and it's bad enough when you can't just do some things, but when you can't access food for your family, that is particularly problematic. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with more calls and questions about food security in the future as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers an education as an adventure in living and learning. Students are the core of APU, representing the aspirations and collective wisdom of our community. Education is collaborative, innovative, and transformational, encouraging student development and honoring Alaska's Indigenous heritage while offering a unique and powerful educational experience. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The polls have closed on the November 8th general election. Preliminary results have been released online by the Alaska Division of Elections. Final results will not be posted until Wednesday, November 23rd, giving time for all ballots postmarked by Election Day to be counted, including mail ballots from rural Alaska, from college students in the lower 48, and from Alaskans serving in the military abroad. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
All right, welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Burl is in Tenneke Springs. Hello.
Good morning. I have a it's a fabulous conversation you're having. Food security is a diverse and complex topic. And I guess my question simply is, what about food security in the context of our ongoing pandemic of chronic diseases? In the United States, about one-third, roughly 100 million folks, are pre-diabetic or diabetic. We have an obesity or overweight rate of about 40%. It affects minorities particularly. One-third of the U.S. population is on the hook for future renal failure. We have chronic stress, anxiety, and now we something new we call systemic chronic inflammation due to food-related, I would best call it addictions. And we are mostly, many, many people are really struggling, as a commentator just noted, and they're struggling with addictive ultra-processed foods. How do we go about changing that?
Oh, that's such an important question, Burl. You know, Ron, you mentioned the USDA program earlier, and I don't know if it's changed much or not, but years ago, I worked for a tribal community and saw some of the boxes of commodity foods that would come in, highly processed, high fat, high sodium, blocks of processed cheese, and not food that's going to really promote good health in the future. And as Ron said, you know, so many rates of high diabetes and other problems because of poor diets. Are you seeing a change in how the USDA looks at the food that it should be supporting to help people that are food insecure?
I don't think we're seeing an immediate change at this time, unfortunately. Part of the problem is that they're buying it in such a high quantity, and they're going It's standardized, so what you get in a TFAT box in Hawaii is going to be pretty simple. I mean, there are some differences regionally, but it's going nationwide, and so that's one immediate challenge. It's certainly a huge concern of ours, and it's another reason why food production here in Alaska and growing more veggies and healthier foods in particular can make a big difference and help make up that difference.
Jen, I want to get you back in here now in our last few minutes. Do you see what your visioning for Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island and Metlakatla, your hub there that you're building, do you see that as the way forward? That maybe instead of the government taking money and investing it into buying crops to distribute, would you rather see that money go to these hubs and invest that in local food production that will also be better quality food?
Well, I wouldn't even necessarily say to the hubs itself, but to the individuals who would be supplying the hubs, to the micro farmers, to the individuals who are growing in a much smaller scale. One of the things that we've noticed as we talk to communities outside of Alaska who are also, you know, separated from the lower 48, is that the way that agriculture is done in Hawaii, in the U.S. Virgin Islands, in Puerto Rico, in Guam, is very different than the way it's done in the American Midwest. And it's very similar to the way it's done in the state of Alaska as well. And the USDA, in a lot of instances, is geared towards the lowest common denominator, which is not our communities. And so it really is trying to get a little bit more of an understanding of the challenges of what it is, what farming means in our communities, and how we can support a grower who probably isn't going to be anywhere close to the scale of the growers that might be supplying some commodity crops to these types of programs, and how we can get them involved into the system as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to go back to the phones for just a moment. Lauren is in Anchorage. Hello, Lauren.
Hi.
Did you have a suggestion, question?
Yes. I gratefully have used the food bank on and off throughout the years. And one thing I think would be helpful is to put recipes for a lot of your items, if you have them hanging on a clip right next to the food that you're selecting. And I also feel that one thing, the amount of milk that you can get was just one full milk carton. I don't know how many ounces that is, 8 per family member. And that's just not enough milk.
Mm.
And I've had that problem every time I've gone.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lauren. We're about running out of time here, but I appreciate your note about, considering what a family needs based on its size, and that might mean they need more milk. And the idea of recipes is a solid one, too, to help people figure out how to kind of diversify the meals that they're serving and with the food that they can get. I wanted to turn back to you, Ron, in our final couple minutes here. I know you've got some food distributions coming up for Thanksgiving, so please tell us about that and how people can learn more about either helping out or signing up to get some assistance.
Absolutely. And I can start more generally and say that monetary and food donations make a significant difference in our ability to help people. And you can learn more information at the foodbankofalaska.org website, both under ways to give and get involved. But we do have Thanksgiving blessing coming up, where we'll be distributing around 12,000 turkeys and fixings for a Thanksgiving meal. And we'll be doing that both in the Matsu Valley and in Anchorage. We'll do it in the Matsu Valley on November 19th, Saturday, November 19th and November 21st in Anchorage. And those sites can also be found at the Food Bank of Alaska website.
What about other areas of the state? Are there other plans that you're aware of for folks in more rural areas?
I know we do send around 1,200 turkeys down to the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank to distribute. And then there are smaller numbers that are going to rural communities as well.
All right. Yeah. And Jen, in our final couple of minutes here, talk about what you'd like to see happen with the project that you're working on in the next 5 years. Where do you want to be? Jen? Are you still there? Well, she's kind of there, but I think we have a bad connection. I'll ask you this question that we had by email, Ron, although I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer it since it's FEMA related. But we had a question from Fairbanks saying, will FEMA pay the air freight costs for food donations from urban areas to rural Alaska villages affected by the Typhoon Murbach? And then they were wondering if there is a number for FEMA in Alaska. We'll see if we can't track down some of that information and add that to the Talk of Alaska post today to see if there's a toll-free number for FEMA that we could put up that people could access. But do you know of anything related to how people might get food out to rural areas?
Well, I will say Food Bank of Alaska hasn't led the response to the storms in western Alaska, but we have worked very closely with Alan Budal, who's the executive director of Lutheran Social Services that is leading the Mass Care Task Force. And so right now we're helping them in terms of distribution, palletizing things like drinking water, generators, different food and clothing items. And we always try to use bypass mail to cut down the price. And of course, logistics and distribution is something that is a particular challenge for us with how remote and geographically isolated so many of the communities we serve are and where these communities are that have been impacted by the storms. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if FEMA is able to cover some of those costs, but I can certainly ask and get back to you on that.
Right. Thank you. And as I noted, we'll see if we can get some clarity on it as well and put that on the Talk of Alaska post at alaskapublic.org. I want to get to the phones just for one quick minute. Kara is in Anchorage and I think has a very important point to make. Hello.
Hi. So I recall reading a study about how eating food from your own culture or that is pleasurable for you to eat oftentimes leads to your body getting more nutrients from the food than from food that you don't like or that's not from your culture. And they studied this with Swedish and Thai women. But a lot of the things that people have suggested today or are talking about trying to implement sound like foods that haven't traditionally been grown in Alaska with like greenhouses. So I was wondering how Alaska native foods are being prioritized so that there aren't or being incorporated so that there aren't racial discrepancies in the solutions.
That's a very, very important point. And I know there are efforts underway, both at the Alaska Native Medical Center, they're feeding traditional foods when they can resource them, and in many communities up north, Anaktuvuk Pass comes to mind, and some of the other communities that are putting up greenhouses and high tunnels and doing exactly that, prioritizing access to traditional native foods and how they can help stabilize their communities through that means. Thank you. That was an excellent question that we didn't have nearly enough time to explore, but I appreciate the call, Kara. Thanks to our guest today, Ron Meehan, Policy and Advocacy Manager for the Food Bank of Alaska, and Jen Brown, the President of the Ketchikan Agricultural Producers Association. Thanks to our engineer, Dave Waldron, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones and social media today, Michael Finelli helped us out. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. And do what you can to help your neighbors as you can this holiday season. Thank you.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.